For June 3rd, 2022, we talk about Hardspace Shipbreaker, Roller Champions, and the Knight of the Scissors. Welcome to Level 416. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Sorry about the last minute absence last week. To be real with you, that shooting down in Texas was too much. I plugged into it too much. And yeah, I did not feel like I was gonna be fit to lead a show where we were gonna goof about video games. So yeah, that's where we were at. So I will take the brunt of the blame on there, but I hope you appreciate.
No blame should be given. I think that was the correct thing to do.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So oh, good.
No, I was agreeing. I'm trying to walk your kids to school the day after, being like, "What the fuck are we doing as a nation?" Mm-hmm. Everyone, call your senators. Do stuff. Email your senators.
Yeah.
Try to unfuck things with whatever levers you've got. Mm-hmm. The effort is worth something alone.
And at the very least, make life terrible for the ones who will not do anything about it. And by terrible, I mean annoying and inconvenient as possible.
Yes. Yep.
Yes. Anyway, so we're back. I do not have a lot of getting caught up banter on this, unless you want to hear about me trying to install a countertop dishwasher.
Is that an option?
it is an option. I've got a tiny kitchen, and yeah, it's been a real thing, because my faucet does not have the ability to accept the adapter. So I'm now off the grid and doing things that plumbers advise me not to do. So so here's where we're at. If I die because a pipe explodes and shoots, just rockets through my sternum, killing me instantly, you know why.
Ohio man dies shit rocket through sternum.
His last words were, "The dishes were just too much." Oh god. So that's me. Dennis, how about you? What's going on?
Not too much. Finding new and creative ways to fold video games into our non-video game segment. I watched Chip and Dale with the kids. Which is the new one that the premise is like a Roger Rabbit style. There's cartoons in real life deal. They have a really funny thing where CGI characters is like the plastic surgery for cartoon characters.
Okay.
Appreciated that. But most notably and most enjoyably, Ugly Sonic is a prominent character in the story. They literally went and got the first edition of what they were going to do for the Sonic movies, and have him as a struggling actor.
Weird. That is really weird.
Yeah. I want to say it's voiced by the director or something.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know that off the top of my head, but I do know it was hilarious. They really hammer on the teeth, slow-mo zoomed in shots as everything else fades out in the background, hammer on the teeth, which is just delightful.
It's ridiculous how memes become content. How is that a plot point in an unrelated movie by an uninvolved studio?
I know. Kudos to Sega or Sega's lawyers or whoever had the power to greenlight that from the Sonic movie side. More studios like that, please. More studios willing to do that kind of stuff. As much as multiverse crap of all sorts is kind of annoying, the just kind of flexibility and not taking things too seriously is much appreciated.
Yeah. Nice. Did the kids enjoy it?
They did, yeah. It was a good time. Will Arnett voices the bad guy, and their minds were blown. And I was like, you know who the bad guy was, right? They're like, no, who? The host of Lego Masters. So yeah, that was good times.
Nice. I have to ask, what is a Lego Master?
A really good show. I think it's on Hulu. Excellent stuff.
Huh. Let's see, David. How about you? What's going on?
Honestly, I got nothing. Had a long weekend. Did a lot of cleaning.
Yeah, that's what they're good for.
Yep.
Adulting. That's...
Nice.
Yep, that's basically who I am now.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the job does never end, much like the dishes.
Yeah. I feel like that's going to be my new greeting. You know, it was, you know, dodging and weaving. I guess now it'll be fighting against entropy.
Yeah. Just, hey, David, how's it going? It never ends.
I got a spoiler alert for you, David.
I mean, I'm sure that we all eventually win over entropy and, you know, get our perpetual motion machines.
Yeah. Eventually, if you believe enough, because that's how physics works.
All right, everyone clap at once.
Let's see. Ben, how about you?
I had a pretty good weekend. I went to Portland for my friend's first year anniversary.
Cool.
And just had a backyard party. I went camping, so it was nice.
First year of being your friend? That's weird, Ben.
Yeah, I know. Sorry I didn't celebrate my first year friendship anniversary with you guys. It's just a new thing that I've instituted.
Nice. Yeah. No, that was considerate of them to get married around Memorial Day, so friends would be free. So it could be like, yeah.
And they did it on a Thursday last year, so it was a Friday party this year.
Ooh.
Ah, nice.
Yeah. Not bad. Well,
I'm just going to say Labor Day weekend weddings are better.
Yeah, that's what you did, wasn't it? I forgot about that.
I have to say that. So
that sounds like an objective conclusion that you've reached. So yes. I accept it.
No, I forgot about that because I can't. I cannot allow myself to accept that was 11 years ago.
It was probably the heat strokes everyone had in the chapel that erased it from your mind.
Oh yeah,
it's fucking September. What is it doing over 100 degrees?
That was a beautiful chapel. It was just the wrong time of year, you know.
Indiana limestone, also known as an oven.
Yeah, it usually was just a big pizza oven. Yeah. Oh. You know.
The pizza oven of love.
It's. I mean, the discomfort was temporary. Oh man.
The photos are forever.
The photos were nice out at Springvale. If you ignore the weird flex of taking wedding photos in a very large ornate cemetery.
It's an arboretum. It's a cemetery.
I mean, most of my friends are goths. That doesn't seem that weird.
You know, I honestly never gave it a second thought until I was about to say, oh, those photos were nice, forgetting where that chapel was. This content is for nobody. But the content that is for everybody is our regular kind of show, what with the the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
The grind,
where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. I don't have a whole lot besides things that I have been streaming. Rather than decide who's going to go, I just decided to go. I did get to put a little bit of time into a game that just reached its full release. This is called Hard Space Shipbreaker.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. I had, you know, seen some people talking about it on Twitter a few months ago, and I thought, oh, this looks like my jam. And one of the games that I was streaming over the weekend ended up being incredibly short. So I decided, well, I guess I will stream this, you know, just to give the people what they want. And also because I wasn't I wasn't done playing video games yet. And wow, is that a really satisfying video game to play? As somebody in chat said, it's like the opposite. It's like House Flipper in reverse, but sci-fi.
so you put the houses back right side up?
Yep. Which is easy to do in zero gravity. I can't go home because the trailer tipped over. King of a Hill. Anyway, Hardspace Shipbreaker, you're playing as somebody who is pulled into one of the more entertaining versions of the ultra futuristic hellish gig economy kind of thing. That's a thing. Games that are searing critiques of exploitative capitalism.
Yeah, I was gonna say, why do you need ultra futuristic in that sentence?
It softens the blow. to differentiate from our current dystopia. Let's say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because if I just said dystopia and exploitative capitalism, you could just say, DoorDash, that's whack. It's like, no, this is in space. This is far enough in the future where they, part of being employed is they blend up your body and take your genetic imprint. So
in
that...
space, no one can hear you unionize.
Yep. What do we want? When do we want it? It's just a vacuum. part of your onboarding is to be blended up and have your genetic signature taken so that you can be constantly revived if you end up getting crushed. So you're signed on with this company, you know, just by being hired, you're put into hundreds of millions of dollars of debt, and you have to earn that money back, by taking ships apart. The solar system is completely trashed because, again, of capitalism. And so you are working salvage, and you are floating around in this basically space equivalent of a dry dock. Will spend your resources to buy one of these junked out hulks, and you go in with a limited set of tools, in your spacesuit with your thrusters. The movement is very similar to something like Outer Wilds, where you can rotate yourself. You can go up and down. It is full 3D motion, where everything, including turning, has momentum to it.
And now, does that make it easier to navigate? Does it feel really fluid, or is that like part of the difficulty is managing that?
It's part of the difficulty, you know. You've got to be able to, you know, get into the ships in order to use your cutter to break apart the struts, to kind of get the panels apart. And getting lost and disoriented in the ship is a time tax that will draw your oxygen down and also draw your fuel down.
Which you have to pay for.
Yes, of course. Yeah. So time is literally money. You have, so far I had only gotten the cutter and the grapple. But you've got those two tools, and you are taking these things apart. You can scan the ship for kind of its structural diagram kind of deal to look for the points where you want to cut through. Once you get a piece loose, you can grab it with the grapple. You want to make sure that it is lighter than you, because otherwise it will not move to you. You will move to it, because apparently they added a third law in there at some point that I wasn't made aware of.
That's one where your AI can't kill you, right?
No, it's the one about the entropy. No, it's the sequel to the one about entropy. I'm getting thermodynamics.
Yeah, I don't believe in the entropy one. I'm constantly fighting against
you. You have to not. but you can cut this stuff up, and your reading will tell you, like, hey, if this is something you need to throw into the furnace, it'll say if this is something that can be processed and salvaged. Just the idea being, you are doing this extremely methodical job, trying to do it efficiently so you survive. And, you know, do not get crushed or run out of air or get sucked into the furnace to take these things apart so you can make money upgrade and do, you know, kind of you get into that upgrade loop like in House Flipper or any number of these games.
Money is functionally your score.
Yes. Yeah. So as you take stuff apart, like if a piece gets wasted or if you throw it into the wrong hole, then you do not get the salvage value out of that. So like money is your score for how efficient you're doing. And as you reach these milestones, you get little kind of like skill points that you can invest. And yeah, like it's very much in that simulator game style of play, but it is an interesting interesting is the wrong word. It is a very satisfying core loop of going in and finding these pieces. And like people who knew the game were in the chat when I was streaming it saying like, oh, he's about to get to the good part. I was like, oh, what's the good part? It's like, oh, you'll see. And when I use the cutter to cut the last like internal strut, like the last internal support, everything just started like coming loose. Like all of the outside panels were just kind of like loosely floating away from each other. And I was like, oh, there we go. Like now I just have to peel this thing. Gary's friend from Everything to Guppy said like, oh yeah, now it's time to peel the shrimp, baby.
As a side note, I like that you describe this as like a simulator game, but interesting.
I did not mean it. I think you're trying to trap me in a linguistic kind of corner here.
I'm trying to do that.
I love these simulator games. David, it sounds like you have some experience with this. Is there anything that I'm missing? Because I didn't get very far in this, but it's definitely one that I can sense is a potential coal hole, you know.
Yeah, so you never got to the to taking out the reactor, have you?
No, not yet.
Okay, so that's a thing where, as I understand it, later on, every ship I've seen at least has a reactor, and it's usually by far the most valuable part of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is, once you disconnect it, you have like a short amount of time before it melts down and just explodes and like kills you.
Okay.
And then also it'll, basically arc and stuff like that will just like start destroying anything near it. So you have to basically, within your, 15-minute shift, plan out and, clear out the path that you're going to get this, get this reactor core out and to the appropriate location as quickly as possible without it, accidentally starting a fire that spreads to, a fuel canister and blows everything up.
Yeah, I imagine that tanks your resale value, much like a real car.
Yeah. Blowing things up, generally not good for capitalism.
But it's, I mean, have I got an industry for you or a complex for you? So when military and industry love each other very much, they make Raytheon, and then blowing stuff up is very good for capitalism.
That's good.
I just like
good
the point. Idea of like salvage becoming unsalvageable. Like this garbage isn't good enough.
You broke the shit. You broke it.
Yeah, and so my understanding, I haven't gotten to this, but my understanding is like later on you can have things like AI cores that contain like rogue AIs that'll like just screw with the ship systems to mess with you. So like start coolant lakes or turn the electricity off and on, because Ooh. Of course in this future there is no lockout tag out.
So they're trying to stop you from taking apart their body.
Yes.
Gotcha. Huh. Yeah, no. I'm really curious about this. It the short time that I played with it really won me over, and seeing everybody's enthusiasm when I booted it up. was, you know, not something I necessarily expected. I didn't know that the game was as kind of like well-known and well-liked as it is before I started it. So that was cool.
Yeah. One thing that does bother me is I understand Shipbreaker. What is a hard space?
Just I think living out in space is hard.
Well, to me it implies that there's like a VR world that is very prominent. Like I've heard hard space in that context before of like, oh, I'm in VR, I'm in hard space, which I'm curious then if there is any kind of allusion to that, like, does VR factor in, or is it implied in any way that, oh yeah, everyone lives in a box with VR goggles on now?
You know what? I don't know. I didn't necessarily pay that much attention to the intro matter because I was, you know, streaming and didn't read it. Your character's life before you go seems really shitty. So I could see them doing something where, you know, where like, okay, everybody lives in these tiny little apartments. You know, like as you are reading your initial contract, you're in this like one room. It's basically like a galley kitchen that your guy lives in, and you can hear your next door neighbor loudly fucking. You know, and there's just you hear music from all the places around you. So there's probably something where like in the world people are living in VR, but I've never heard it called hard space. I've always heard it called meat space.
Yeah, meat space.
Mm-hmm. But which that might be
meat space Shipbreaker. That's
I have seen it called hard meat space, but that was on a very, very bad website. So.
You put it on a helicopter, it becomes meat spin space.
I do like to imagine that somewhere there's a sequel that's like, I don't know, soft space Shipmaker.
Ooh. Oh man, it's a prequel where you make all the ships that you ultimately take apart. Yeah,
showing the inevitability of entropy.
Are you playing this off stream at all, Cole, or are you just gonna do this on Twitch streams?
I'm probably going to continue playing it off stream. I'm taking a break from streaming for the next few weeks. Gotcha. Just because I have run out of things to stream that I have already played. So I want to take a break because of workload stuff, but also I want to like kind of vet some games using that time and get like a little schedule put together so I can be a little bit more purposeful with what I decide to put on the weekend streams like that.
Right on.
Yeah. The other thing, so that night, let's say I'll do one more that night. Mm-hmm. What was so short that made me, that made me think like, okay, I can't just stream for a half hour, was an indie horror game. It's another indie, throwback, you know, horror game made to, resemble PlayStation 1 games like Resident Evil and Silent Hill. This game that I played and streamed was called The Night of the Scissors. Yes, believe it's called The Night of the Scissors. It's tank controls, although weirdly you control your own camera, which I didn't realize for the first, I think, 10 minutes. No, it was only a half hour for the first like 5 minutes that I played. So I was like, man, this camera is really, it seems like there's stuff it's not showing me. Like it's really spending a bunch of time just like in a close up on my face. That's weird. And then I touched the mouse and I was like, oh, this game is this game is unique in that it is doing the classic style tank controls. But it is putting all of the camera responsibility on me. That is strange. You play as a criminal who with your buddy, you're breaking into this this old post office to rob the place. I mean, I don't know if you got a tip that there was something there, but the post office, you know, long abandoned, has since become the nest, the lair for a serial killer called the Snipper Killer, who uses scissors. And you can kind of picture how this is gonna go. You know,
wasn't that the villain from Clock Tower?
Scissorman is the canonical, like, that's the mascot villain from the Clock Tower series. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. That was one of the reasons that I gravitated toward this, that, and it was like new and trending on Steam. It's worth saying this is only a $3 game, so the half hour time wasn't necessarily a big deal to me. You know, I streamed it, I made content, but other people might be a little bit bummed out by that. But it's worth knowing that this is a cheap game. But like, you go in, there are some relatively simple puzzles that you have to solve, but pretty quickly the snipper ends up being in play. And of course, once he finds you, he runs way too fast and will kill you instantly and you restart at a checkpoint. But I bring this game up mostly to highlight the genius of choosing the scissors as the weapon for this for this serial killer who is going to be, you know, looking after you in the dark, you know. And the trick to it is that somebody just air snipping in the room around you and the pace of it picking up when they're closer to you or more agitated is a really, really good auditory horror cue.
You know, nice.
So like, you'll be hiding in a locker and you'll just hear snip, snip, snip. And I'll turn and look and then snip, snip, snip. And yeah, it's a real good idea. From a sensory point of view, of course, when he sees you, the screen gets all distorted and it's jump scare. Like, this is made to be like a streamer screamer game. So, you know, it's like way too loud and it runs up and you die immediately.
Did you scream?
I got startled. I think, Ben, you watched this maybe. Were you in there?
I was out of town this weekend, so I was not able to catch out of streams. Town.
People who are listening can say whether or not I screamed. I definitely got startled a few times, got frustrated a few times. but like, ultimately, the fact that it was only $3 and only a half an hour, it's hard to hold anything against it, really, because it didn't take a lot of my time and didn't take a lot of monetary resources. It's just, it's real slight, and it feels... I guess I would say, like, that slightness, like, yes, it doesn't necessarily work, you know, too much against it, but also it doesn't work too much in its favor because it really doesn't feel like a full-fledged product. This feels a little bit like a, like something that would be in a bundle or something that would be released. Like, if this was in the DreadX collection or the Haunted PS1 demo disc, I wouldn't have batted an eye. But the fact that this was its own SKU that was sold makes it feel like a really strange product. That said, there's not like a complete lack of things to enjoy about it. So I'm in a weird spot.
It's that beer that you'd have in a flight, but you wouldn't want, you know, the entire pint.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I don't necessarily want more of it. It's just weird to play on its own. It's weird to have that as its own Steam library entry, you know, to say it in the most trivial way possible, because who cares about their Steam library? But
do you know how much further you're going to have to scroll now to get the games later in the alphabet?
Oh, probably 20, 21 pixels, something like that.
They make any rock, paper, scissors jokes in the game?
Not that I saw, no. Yeah. Most of the humor was like there were some things that were like the same text response you would get when you investigated something in Silent Hill is what it would say here. Yeah.
Whose blood is this?
Yeah. I hope it's not Chris's blood. I don't feel like washing my hands right now. Stuff like that. Oh, any questions about Night of the Scissors?
Sounds interesting.
Yeah. Ben, I want to hear about yours.
Yeah, you know what the deal is. We talked about this a little bit before the recording.
We did.
I only got one. It's pretty big, but I beat Elden Ring just yesterday, in fact.
Nice.
Yeah, the end stats, I ended at like 171 level. I respec'd and did a strength build. So I dual wielded hammers. I did brick hammer and one other, I think club.
Okay.
And I max leveled the brick hammer because it's S scaling if you make it heavy. And I just went to 24 with the club. I didn't want to use a dragon on it in case I didn't want to use it like long term or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's a way to make the like the top level dragon stones again. So that's why.
I believe, and somebody's going to come in. I believe that there's only a finite number in a given run, and you have to go new game plus to get more. But there are more of them than you think. I've taken a couple of somber weapons up to maximum.
I have like four or five of each, I think. So like I've definitely seen them around, but yeah, even then, it's like I don't know how long I'm going to play this run for, and if there's like things in the future I'd want to max out, then I'm trying to be more cautious with those. I can make other stones. Like, you can make up to 9 on the somber, and I guess it's like 8 or whatever on the regular. Mm-hmm. And I have those in place, so I'm not worried about that part. I think, like, I don't know what to say narratively about the game, because, like, I don't want to spoil much. So, I mean, I guess I'll just vaguely say it. You know, it's a Dark Souls game. It doesn't stray too far from that sort of path. But but in that sense, it's also enjoyable, too. I guess pacing wise, it probably does a better job than OG Dark Souls, where it didn't terribly feel like a grind going about like finding like the upper echelon bosses, like maybe Dark Souls feels like in the second half. But yeah, there's so many places to explore. I think the key standout of the game is just the level design and the differentiation of like what the terrain is or what the setting is. Yeah. Is all like really, really well done. You know, it's still, you know, there's similar themes, you know, as to all the two Dark Souls games that I've played, where it's, you know, like this very, I don't know what the word for it, like the castle type quality that they have. It's not Victorian, but it's like, and it's not Gothic, but it's like, I don't know how to, classical maybe, these like classical castles and stuff.
Yeah.
But like just the difference in like geography, like, you know, the fact that there's like a volcano, there's water setting, there's a swamp, you know, it's like there's all these like different places to play in. It's just the differentiation's like really impressive.
All these different regions of Cleveland.
Oh yeah.
is that a serious thing, or was that just something that came up in Slack about I know it's not serious. Where did that come from, the lands between being Ohio?
So for a while, Google's like AI thing, if you Google searched where is Elden Ring set, it would say Ohio.
Which is, I mean, ridiculous, because Caelid is in the south, in the southeast, and obviously Caelid, if this was Ohio, would be up in the northwest by Toledo, because that's where all the Michigan is seeping through.
That's what the rot is.
Yeah, Michigan.
The only reason you can't see it is there's so many potholes. That's where the rot falls into. Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, it's hard for me to. I haven't really wrapped my head around or have a really succinct way to talk about the game, I guess, but definitely enjoyed it. I like the fact that you can respec at any given time. I'm not really sure what to do from here. I don't have a burning itch to like do a new game plus right now. So I did bleed build for the most part for like the first like 70% of the game, starting to hit a wall with that, respect to strength, and was pretty okay with that. If there's like a new build or something that catches my interest, I'll probably try and do that. Mm-hmm. I have been impressed, because initially one of the things that I had a gripe about with this game over Dark Souls is, one of the things I really like about Dark Souls is the fact that you can kind of more or less break the game doing these kind of dream builds, where it's like, oh, I really want to do a bloody scythe run. I'm going to run into the catacombs way before I have any business being there and like snipe this really quick and then make an entire build around this and then just like have an OP run during certain areas. I thought that was so cool. And like, I love the fact that you do that. And initially I didn't think you could do that as well in Elden Ring, so I was kind of like bummed about it. Mm-hmm. But the more and more I'm watching content about it, the more and more it's seeming like you can actually do those things.
Yeah. You can make a beeline for Moonvale, things like that.
Yeah. You can do that. You can actually get pretty far into the game too. Like there's these soft gates as, as elevators, which, man, they do not explain how those work well at all. Like, I had to go to a wiki to figure out, like, how to even, like, I had the pieces, but I didn't even know how to activate it, you know? So anyway, there's like soft gates for that, but you can get around those. There's kind of harder gates for certain weapons that'll be like a boss blocking it. So those you kind of have to figure out how to do on your own, I guess. But yeah, anyway, the point being is that you can get similar levels of enjoyment in this as you can Dark Souls, or at least that meta is evolving. So I think that can actually get even better as time goes on.
Yeah.
Another small like criticism is, and I think it's something, is like towards the back half of the game, it feels like there's more copy paste enemies in places that they don't really have business being in. An example is there's a lobster in a snow region, and it's like, oh, I don't know why this is here. Like, this doesn't make sense.
You've never heard of snow crab?
Yeah. I mean, it does match the goofiness of a lot of the monsters in the game, so I can see that. But there's a couple of moments like that where it's like you get to the point where you kind of feel like you've seen everything. The mm-hmm. monsters in the game are usually best introduced the first time you see them. Those are always really well done. But then after that, it's kind of like a crapshoot. Like, some of them are just kind of like, feel like they were just kind of tossed in for a little no reason. Still a lot of good ideas in this game. They have some good monster design, just with like changing like how you go after them. I'll just say who they are, and then people can figure out the way they do zombies and priests is good. I think mm-hmm. they've probably done that in a similar way in other games. I think they did that in Demon's Souls, the same mechanic.
Zombies and priests, you mean like the I need more clarification on that.
Where the mechanic being that you need to run past certain enemies and go for a particular enemy.
Yes, yeah.
And then also with the like ghost snails, a cool way to mix it up.
Oh, so you went to like the ultra optional place.
Yes. Yeah. Gotcha. I this is like memeable. So most people know about this. Melinda, or I forget her name.
Millennia. Yeah.
Yeah. I got to her, which I think is like the end of, it's like a secret spot and a secret spot and a secret spot sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I got to her, able to beat the first half of her, didn't even come close to beating the second half. So I don't even know if I'll do that or not, but, that's kind of, yeah, so that might give you an idea of where I was at. Mm-hmm. I mentioned this to you. I got to the final boss at like level 150 and kind of bounced off of it. Like, I didn't feel like I had a good shot against it. So I kind of went around exploring areas that I hadn't gotten to. There are a few places that I knew I hadn't like fully explored, and then leveled up to like 171 and then came back. There's kind of a game changer. You can do this earlier if you can invade people. I was kind of blocked off from this. There's the bird strategy of rune farming, mm-hmm. Which is like you shoot a bird from like way off in the distance and it'll run towards you and fall off the map and die. Mm-hmm. And you can do this right by where a bonfire is. So you can get like 13K souls like in like 15 seconds or so.
Yeah.
And so I mean, it's even better than the 7K you can do in Dark Souls. Like, you can, at that point, you can kind of grind for as long as you want to get mm-hmm. to whatever level you want to get at. And literally when I got to like 171, I kind of had a hard time thinking of where I'd want to put like extra attributes. Cause like at that point, my strength was at 80 and didn't really need to go higher. Vitality was 50, didn't really need to go higher. Endurance was 50. So it's like, and I'd meet all the minimums on like other things that I wanted to use. So, So there's not, you know, there's not real a lot of sense of needing to grind any further than that.
Yeah.
So at least with that build, where am I at? And then the other thing is like with this run through, I had similar feelings with Dark Souls, where, you know, like half the quest lines I was able to do and like had satisfying conclusions. Half of them, like, I biffed or just didn't check with people at the right time and they just kind of ended. So I think if I were to do another playthrough, I'd probably try and see the quests that I wasn't able to do and kind of check out what those were. There's one quest in particular with a character named Ronnie. She's like the person who gives you a stag at the beginning of the game. It is a long ass quest. So I was able to finish that successfully.
Yes.
And I ended up going with that ending for the first ending, just because I figured I might not want to do that involved of a quest in the future. But
yes. No, that's a good quest to do, because that takes you, I mean, like, of the side quests, that is the one that introduces you to the most, like, exclusive content to it. Yeah. So, yeah, that was a good one to do.
Gives you a lot of nice scenic routes if you're looking to see all the places there are. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think about this game, Cole? cut in on your podcast about Elden Ring.
I like the game quite a bit. You know, we on the podcast we just recorded about Stormvale, and I'm looking forward to getting into Liurnia, because I feel like that is where the game really kind of finds its feet to a degree.
Yeah, that's like when you enter mid game proper, I guess.
Yeah, and just the Academy Raya Lucaria. That's such a good dungeon. I'm really excited. It's funny because it was like an all out mad dash, and I have to congratulate you. You beat the game in less overall time than it took me. Like, it took me like a month and a half to beat the game.
our hours might be the same, but yeah.
Yeah. No. So, but you know, I obviously enjoy the game quite a bit. Well, not obviously. Just because I do a show doesn't mean I have to like it. Like the game.
See Dark Souls 2.
See Dark Souls 3. I really like Dark Souls 2, actually.
All right.
Yeah, Dark Souls 3 was the one that really bummed me out. Bummed lots of people out, because it didn't, we didn't like it. But yeah, I mean, my question for you is, like, was there like a prestige dungeon or an area that like stuck out for you as like, oh yeah, this is this is the shit. Like, this is something that was like the real standout for you. Not necessarily favorite.
I agree. The Academy was like beautiful, and like, it was just like, it just thematically, it just hit all the notes. And like, you know, I guess maybe minor spoilers for the area, just like jumping across like rooftops and stuff like that was like so satisfying. And like, I don't know, seeing cogs like floating by magic in the air and turning and stuff, like all that stuff was just like so like beautiful. Like, again, the art style is like so amazing on it. And then like the even settings like the debate hall or whatever is just like, even though like you can, and this is kind of like something that's like a theme of the game, is like, so there's like a debate hall where you have like this minor boss battle or something like that. It's like this beautiful setting, and you can imagine like this like Harry Potter-esque world where it's like people are talking about these finer points of magic, and is it okay with how many crystals we're generating? This could be a bad thing or something. I don't know. But if you look, like the hall's lined with pictures of professors on either side, and this, you know, like wearing this like kind of something similar you'd see like PhD, you know, professors wearing on graduation, or these like, you know, magical costumes or whatever. But if you notice, like every five or six paintings, there's like a repeated image. So it's like, you know, they have like 20 different paintings, but you know, they could only devote so much time to like making these before they're like, all right, just copy paste it, get it done, sort of thing. And that sort of seems to be kind of like a theme, is like they put a lot of care into the content that they do, but at a certain point they're like, we got to get this game out, so like this is good enough, like let's get it done, you know.
It's so big.
Yeah I don't want to shortchange it so much. This compared to like Dark Souls, it's like, I don't know, like what, five to ten times the size maybe.
I'm sure there's a number. It feels much bigger than that.
Yeah, it's much more differentiated, because they do keep up with like everything's pretty distinct from one another. They do copy paste some the enemies sometimes, but they do try and make the areas pretty distinct and like the feeling of them very distinct. In terms of like the like castles or the strongholds or whatever, the dungeons that they do or whatever, I mean, each one of them feels pretty good, though. Even things that are like aesthetically like I found like the Stormvale Castle like pretty off-putting, and that it just, you know, seems aggressively kind of hostile towards you the entire time you're there. But still, like from an art style, it's just gorgeous the entire time. So yeah, and then the other thing that's kind of interesting in this is like so many of the bosses are optional in this game, and it's not exactly clear that that's the case. I don't know how much of this spoiler this is or not. You know, the game tells you early on, like, there's like six towers, and you think there's six bosses, so it's like, okay, I'm gonna get, it's like Shadow of the Colossus, right? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna beat these six things, go to these six towers, and then I'll finish the game. That's not the case, though. Like, you don't, I'm thinking back, I'm not entirely sure, but I don't even know how many of the six you actually have to beat in order to get towards the end.
After you beat your first shard bearer, your kind of chief guy at your hub says, oh yeah, you only need one more to get where we need you to go.
It's the inverse of the bells from Dark Souls.
Right. Where instead of lying that there are fewer, they lie that there are more.
I think that's the only hard gate is like there's definitely, you just definitely need to get two, but you can do them in kind of whatever order you want, which I like that flexibility. But it does make it like a little bit hard to understand, like, what's my current objective right now? Like, I lost track of that several times throughout playing the game where it's I forgot this is said like very early on in the game. Like, the person you're traveling with tells you that they want you to take you to a certain part of the game. I forgot completely about that because I spent so much time like in these other places that we're talking about, you know, for like 20 or 30 hours. And then it's like, oh, I finally got to this place I was supposed to be at the beginning.
Yeah. You forgot how to finish the game because the game got in the way.
yeah, pretty much. Like, they do a good job of signposting things like the tree, since you can see it from everywhere. It would be better, though, if they had some reminders of what you should be doing.
Yeah.
And I don't know, but maybe not. Whatever. It's an open world game. Like, you're doing interesting things. Anyway, whatever. the upgrade system, I do think, is good. This was, like, another thing that I wasn't sure of. But I think I had figured this out by the last time we talked about it. Like, the fact that you can upgrade the spirits that you summon, the fact you still upgrade your weapons, it does do a good job of like, okay, it gives you these new things. So if you do hit a wall, you can go back and be like, okay, let me explore this mechanic. Maybe this can help me like kind of get a little bit more of an edge on like whatever boss battle that I'm on right now. Mm-hmm. But like, I think the biggest like hurdle in this game is understanding the order of events of where you need to go.
Yeah.
And so Dark Souls was a little bit easier because there's maybe like 10 different places you need to go. Like, here it ends up being like 30. And so it gets really hard sometimes, especially if you don't completely explore an area, but like you explore it enough and then leave it. Like, there's just too many threads that you literally need to go to a wiki and figure out like what places you've missed or where you can actually explore. The one region, the volcanic region or whatever, I missed that entirely, and I guess there's a good reason for that, but I don't know. But it's cool to know that there's like still like a lot of content there that you might have missed.
That's one of the best dungeons in the game, Magma Mansion up there. Yeah.
Yeah, but they like intentionally hide it from you to mm-hmm. some degree, you know? So, I don't know. I definitely enjoyed playing it. I don't know how much longer I'll play it or how many like run-throughs or more characters I'll do with it. I am definitely interested to see what other people do with the game and kind of what ways you can break it. Mm-hmm. Some of the mechanics I didn't interact with hardly at all is like the perfume mechanics I didn't really do too much with. Mm-hmm. But it seems like there's a lot of potential there with like how you can, I don't know.
They introduced that so late. You have to get up to the plateau before that you even find the items to do that.
True. And and the pot system I had a little interaction with but didn't really do too much with. I don't know, but there's so much potential there. So again, can't compliment the level design enough, because there's like the number of dungeons in this game, there's so many. They're, you know, in the hundreds for sure. But there's hardly a single dungeon that I can think of that I'm like, oh yeah, that was just like poorly laid out or that was bad design. Like, they're all like very, very interesting as far as like they do a good job of like hiding secrets where you might not expect them, or like playing with what your expectations are and like do a good job of like forecasting where you need to go and how mm-hmm. you might be able to get there. And there's only like maybe a dozen like level designers on this game on the entire, in the entire company. So I was very impressed by that. And I'm also impressed by like the potential there. You know, it's like they have hundreds of tiny things, right? You know, of this perfume mechanics, these talisman mechanics, these weapons that are highly differentiated. you know, they have all these tiny things, but nothing feels completely broken, right? Nobody's managed to completely break this game in like a way where it's like, you know, completely trivial. No. Yeah. So it's that like level of game design is very impressive, that you can have that much flexibility and still not have a broken game. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway. I'm happy you've enjoyed it.
Yeah. I think that's plenty to say about the game proper, but yeah, there's so much more you could talk about just because there's so much content there. So
yeah.
But yeah, I'll let you do that, Cole, on the podcast that's dedicated for doing that. So
yeah, we'll do our best.
Yeah.
Nice. And that's all you got?
That's all I got.
Cool. Let's see, Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I got just one new game that launched very recently. I started playing Roller Champions.
Roller Champions.
Yeah, the Ubisoft original. It is, in game terms, it is essentially Rocket League meets Knockout City. Okay. In sports terms, it is Roller Derby meets Basketball.
Huh.
And it is a really fun little free-to-play game centered completely around, you know, competitive play. So yeah, like it's 2-3-man teams. You're in basically a giant oval, so think like a skating rink, only there's, you know, really high walls, actually to the point of looping over the top on every side, and so you can, like, you know, jump up the walls and then pump your way down to like really gain speed, etc. And you're fighting over a ball to carry it for a lap around the oval. And if you successfully make a lap around, hit all four gates, you can shoot it through a hoop that's up on the wall to score a point. If you complete 2 laps before shooting, you get 3 points. And if you complete 3 laps before shooting, you get 5 points. First to 5 points wins.
Okay.
Yeah, and so you're doing this on roller skates. So it's very much got that roller derby feel, and it makes for a really fun kind of like pickup basketball game feel. You know, sports sim for a sport that doesn't exist, I guess.
Can you pass to your teammates and still have that count towards the lap, or does it start and reset?
In fact, as long as the other team doesn't touch the ball, it stays your progress. So you can throw it through the gates. You can pass it to a teammate through the gates. You can carry it yourself. You can get really creative. And I feel like I'm just now getting to the point where, you know, I'm playing at skilled enough levels that you're seeing people do some of that cool stuff. Mm-hmm. So one of the cool things, there's kind of, it's a relatively simple move set, but it gives you a lot of depth. So, you know, another parallel to Rocket League. You can, you know, you can skate, you can dodge in a direction. If you're not holding the ball, it's a tackle. If you are holding the ball, it's a dodge. And you can jump, but only if you're not holding the ball, you can do an uppercut that is essentially like a mega jump that sends you up into the air. But like I said, if you're carrying the ball, you can't do that. And it's the main way that you can get high up on the wall and get speed quickly. And so, you know, what I'm starting to learn how to do is as you're approaching the turnaround of the oval, you kind of roll the ball kind of off into the corner and then cut left so that the ball kind of rolls way up the wall and then uppercut to jump up to the ball, essentially passing to yourself, and you come back down with a lot of speed. So that is, you know, there's a lot of interesting things you can do: passing to teammates, passing back to teammates, timing passes with a teammate's different maneuvers. It all feeds into getting successfully around that circle. If you're on defense, go ahead.
Is it hard to like give and receive passes or like coordinate, especially like, do they have like voice chat, or is it just like people are just expected to be open at all times and ready to catch a ball?
Well, you kind of, it's a strategy thing. So depending on where you are in relation to the teammate with the ball, and where you are in the track, the right thing to do is always different. So if you're ahead of them, and you're in the corner that they're headed into, it's really great for you to just kind of jump up high in that corner, because then they can pass to you and you can kind of zoom down, and use the momentum to get down the straightaway real quick. If you're behind them, you kind of want to build speed and try to like zoom past them. And then they can just kind of dish it forwards to you while you're going really fast. You can also, there's also a, in skateboarding, it's called skitching, right? Where you like hold on to the back of a car. Am I remembering that right?
Yeah.
So there's a skitching mechanic where you can grab onto a teammate and have them tow you, and then you can launch yourself forward from them. And so, you know, if you're the teammate who is kind of right next to the person with the ball, rather than calling for a pass, you should probably just let them skitch off of you and launch themselves. On defense, you, like I said, the dodge is a tackle. If you're on defense, tap it once, and you do kind of a short burst in whatever direction you're holding the left stick, tap it twice and you'll do a dive that goes really fast, but then you're kind of picking yourself up off the ground afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's fairly easy to hit the person with the ball. Like, it's very generous, I guess, to the defenders. In giving the hits, and if you hit someone, it'll knock the ball out. But like I said, that, you know, that's not automatically your ball. Then it remains the offensive's ball until you actually touch it. So you can successfully tackle someone, but if you don't pick up the ball, you know, they can still keep it moving forward through the gates. And you know, when you pick up the ball, all the progress resets, and you kind of have to start at the first gate again, which is right where the hoop is. And kind of start your lap, or start your lap over if you lost possession and then got it back really quickly. The overall feel of the game is very similar to what I've experienced in Rocket League, Knockout City, competitive games.
Yeah.
What's that?
So where people trash talk you all the time and make you feel bad about it.
I haven't had, the game has voice chat, and I try to communicate well. And like I was describing, it's especially important to be like, all right, you go, I'll set up in the corner. Or like, you got, the hardest thing is when you have the ball and you're kind of driving down the straightaway, you've got the camera pointed, you know, the way you're moving most of the time, but you're blind then to, you know, half your field of view, or half of your, you know, 180 degrees is always going to be blind no matter which way you're facing. And so having a teammate just call out where defenders are, is hugely useful. So I try to do that for people. I try to tell them where I'm going to be. Another thing is like, if you get someone on a real breakaway, instead of chasing behind them, or your teammate on a breakaway, instead of chasing behind them, turn around and go the opposite direction and kind of set up for them at the next corner. So get really far ahead and then you can just break it wide open. So I try to communicate. I very rarely have anyone else talk. And even more rarely have other people who talk in any kind of useful way. I haven't had like toxic people, so that, you know, kudos to whatever moderation filtration system for that. Like, no one has been especially angry or abusive in voice chat, but there's not as much team talk as I would like. And you know, I've played some with friends, and so obviously we're in voice chat usually over Discord for that. And when you just dominate, even with just one other teammate who like really is synced up with you, you can dominate. And so it's kind of cool to see that the game, you know, there's some room for personal heroics, but, the team play is really going to get you to the next level. That's probably also the thing is like, you know, you're going to need to dodge, as the person carrying the ball, but dodging kind of takes your speed back down to its base level. So you get that quick burst of, you know, getting out of the way, but then you're easier to catch up with. So you're going to need to coordinate with your teammates.
See, gotcha. Now I just assume that if I'm not running into any toxic people on chat, that just means I must be behind in what are the most up-to-date dog whistles.
Silence is racist. Actually, that's true in some cases, but... yeah, go figure.
Is there any text chat or anything like that, or
no text chat that I've seen? Just voice chat. And there's a cross-play support, so you get a fair number of people on Xbox and PlayStation and stuff. So I could see them not having text chat just because you know, not everyone's at a keyboard. Yeah. That said, I am surprised that there's not a more sophisticated ping system, or even like the Rocket League thing where like the D-pad is different phrases or callouts. Yeah. You can call for a pass, but there's nothing else.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is that consoles ruin it for everyone.
Yeah, that's about right. Speaking of ruining things, so the passes, by the way, are kind of magnetic. So if you're looking roughly at a teammate, they'll get a triangle, or you know, the Y, I guess, if you're on an Xbox controller, over their head, and you just tap that to pass to them, and it will kind of seek them to a point. If they change direction really significantly from when you passed, then the ball will miss them. But you know, most of the time, it's going to seek to them. That said, I have found that like the radius for that triangle showing up is really annoyingly small. Especially because the pass button isn't used for anything else. Like you are only going to pass with that. So there's no reason to not like have a person that's anywhere near you highlighted. But it feels like you kind of really need to zero in on them to make the pass. And that the number of times where I've had a person with the triangle over their heads, and by the time I've gone and pressed the button, it's gone away and I don't successfully get the pass off. Mm. That happens way too often for me. So I think it's early in the game. I hope they tweak some things. And I would love to see passing be a little more generous. I don't think that would break anything because you have lots of options as the defender to tackle the person with the ball, tackle the person being passed to, or just get in between them and intercept. Like, there's just a lot of, annoyance when you're the ball carrier on that front. But yeah, other than that, it's been a very smooth experience. There has been some people dropping in and out of matches, probably not more than in other games, but when there's only three people on a team, you notice their absence. It's pretty quick to sub in AI bots on the behalf of people that are leaving, but people who are kind of connecting and disconnecting don't really get that benefit.
Yeah.
And connectivity is weird in terms of it's on a battle pass system. I guess I should clarify, there's free to play game. You can pay for the battle pass to get extra goodies every level, but you can still unlock stuff as you level up even without it. It's all purely cosmetic stuff. But I'll finish a game that should, you know, have me complete a quest for the battle pass and it just doesn't register. Which, you know, battle passes are kind of sleazy, and I know there's a lot of psychology going on there, but that makes it feel all the more bad when you do the thing to get the dopamine squirt and it doesn't click.
Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah. Fortunately, and like the game is more than enough to keep you playing all on its own. And it's a good time.
Mm-hmm. I imagine that I imagine that the multiplayer stuff for a fun little side project game like this is helped out by the fact that this is the same publisher, if not developer, that does stuff that is as popular and active as Rainbow Six, either Extraction or Siege, you know?
Yeah, it definitely benefits from that. And they have been pushing Roller Champions hard.
Mm-hmm.
A random annoying fact. So, you know, I still play Trackmania a lot, and the home screen of Trackmania now has a news section. And ideally that's used to feature news about Trackmania or, content from the community. And they were putting Roller Champions ads.
They were doing cross promo. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you know, I pay for the club access to Trackmania, and one of the perks is no ads. So what the fuck?
Oof.
That's not okay.
Yeah.
But you know, I guess it's good to see that they're trying to support a smaller game like Roller Champions, even if it is in a way that I don't like.
Yeah.
But yeah, highly recommend, if you liked Rocket League or like Rocket League, you know, I know people still play that, weirdos.
you're not wrong.
you're gonna like Roller Champions. There's a lot of vibe similarity, even if the mechanical differences are pretty significant.
So does, you mentioned it has like cosmetic stuff like that, does it have the kind of roller derby aesthetic?
Say more about what you're thinking, because I want to say yes. Like, there's a little bit of punk to it all.
It's like angry lesbian Rosie the Riveter.
Yeah, you get a fair amount of that. It's interesting. Like, there's you select a body type, and that's changeable at any moment. So none of the cosmetics are specifically to one gender, although some, you know, trend more traditionally towards one or another. But you can equip any cosmetic on any person, and you can make your person look any way you want at any time. So they're very giving with that, which I appreciate. I think they have trended a little bit more like urban, a little more extra, I guess. So take roller derby and then put it in downtown LA, and you've got your thing.
Yeah.
Just from a gameplay video, it looks like the character creation might be similar to like Fortnite, where it's supposed to just be very, I don't know, like it doesn't matter what character you are, right? So it's like just have as many options as you want, maybe.
I would say yes, except for like there's a very limited set of faces to choose from. And I found it disturbing. The faces have no animation whatsoever, even while you're doing emotes. So you like score a goal and you're like, oh, cool, I'm going to do my celebration emote. And it's just these like dead eyes. unmoved face as the body is like fist pumping and jumping up and down.
The body.
Yeah, there is a real disconnect. I'm guessing it's a small team. They had to focus on what they were going to give love and attention to. And animated faces were very clearly not one of those things.
So, yeah.
It's a good time. It's at least right now, it feels like everyone's still kind of figuring out the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's got that really fun, like you see a competitor do something, you're like, oh, that's brilliant, I gotta try that. And then you try it in the next game, and then you realize that there's a very simple counter to it that you weren't thinking of, and then there's all this kind of discovery, cross discovery, etc. With the through line of it all being, you need to pass more. Please, God, do more passing. You're not the hero. You will not get all the way around if you just hold the ball.
Yeah.
Dish it. Play Roller Champions. It's fun.
Yeah. Since this is a multiplayer competitive game that does not involve shooting people violently, is this one that your kids have been watching or you've been getting them into?
They've watched me play it, and it would be totally friendly for them. They are like hardcore into their own gaming now. I couldn't get them to watch me for the world. They want to be playing on the Switch their own games.
So gotcha.
Proud papa moment, but Mario is definitely beating out whatever I'm doing.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Roller Champions. David, how about you?
I've not been doing a whole heck of a lot. The new season dropped in Destiny 2.
That game you're not enjoying.
Yeah. It's complicated. So brief rundown of some of the plot. The Cabal are a race of power suit wearing rhino people that initially under a that are based on ancient Rome.
Okay.
And initially, under their Caesar, Calus, they're one of the main antagonists. They're the main antagonist in the base game. But eventually, Calus's daughter, whose name escapes me right now, deposes him. And then later on allies with you. And Calus leaves in his, pleasure yacht to pursue dark Cthuloid energy that is whispering to him. And now in this season, he is back and is set up in the orbit of Mars and has activated this ancient technology that basically there's these things called the pyramid tech that as a defense mechanism create nightmare embodiments of people's inner shame and inner demons and stuff.
Hmm. Silent Hill machine.
Yeah, exactly. And so Silent Hill, except with much more shooting your ways out of problems and much less walking down halls and like reading text.
So like later Silent Hill.
Yes, yes, exactly. So it's interesting. It's kind of playing into one of the characters is basically was a villain of one of the expansions that, you know, over the course of the expansion you kill. And then because in order to become a guardian, the way that happens is basically a ghost revives someone who's dead. And so he ends up coming back as a guardian. And so now he's a good guy. And, you know, kind of his inner demon stuff is him wrestling with, you know, to what degree he's responsible for, you know, the things he did in his past life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a reasonable amount of pathos.
Okay.
Also funny because the character that's kind of his de facto counselor is Eris Morn, who is basically, you know, gothy Mickey emo pants.
Okay.
And so it's really funny having her be kind of forced in the role of trying to be like supportive and comforting.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun. It's mostly an excuse to shoot people.
That's my understanding, is that Destiny lore is a whole bunch of proper nouns that ultimately line up to pew pew pew.
So I think it's funny. I was thinking the other day, it's kind of funny because when Destiny was first announced, they very much pitched it as, you know, this is going to be the next Star Wars. And I think they actually succeeded. And I mean this somewhat sarcastically, but also somewhat, you know, positively. In that, just like Star Wars, the storyline is often pretty mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
But people care a whole lot more about the world than they do about the actual stories that corporate bothers to tell in that world.
Okay.
So, like, the actual stories are kind of shit, but I care a lot about the various characters and kind of the various, you know, plot points and ideas.
Yeah. They've given you a good source book, but like bad novels in the setting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think one of my favorite recent things is, and this probably isn't going to land unless you know the characters, but the character that is the announcer for the Crucible is Lord Shax. And he is just like just super, super gung-ho and, you know, aggressive, not like creepy militaristic, but, you know, just super, you know, all about, you know, blowing things up and, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so each of the missions, even the little daily missions you get, has, you know, some quote that from a prominent character in the series that that, you know, kind of is the flavor text. And so I got a daily mission that was just to defeat enemies using rocket launchers.
Mm-hmm.
And the quote attributed to Lord Shax simply says, "5 solid minutes of uninterrupted laughter."
Okay.
So just, you know, it's one of those things. I like the characters a lot, and they have a very solid understanding of, you know, who the characters are and, you know, what their characterization is. Again, the actual story, you know, that's not really why you're there.
Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned this is a new season. Like, what did they add play-wise? Is this more dungeons? Is this, you know, like new special events?
Yeah, so it's a new raid and a new zone, basically, with a kind of core event. So these would, you know, it's sort of set up pseudo, not open world, but kind of level based. But if this were a more conventional game, this in effect would be like a new play mode.
Okay.
That they added. And then the part that interests me the most is with that, there's a quest line that they've added that has, you know, often, you know, one or two cutscenes associated with it. And more importantly, like, you know, full voice acting, stuff like that. So there is actual, you know, actual storyline added to this, which is kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
This one directly directly continues the plot of the previous season, which is kind of nice. So,
yeah.
So yeah, it's, you know, overall, a lot of fun, very enjoyable. Oh, I also kind of fun, there's new equipment with each season. So this season, the equipment comes in kind of two themes. One is Callus, the previous Caesar, his kind of custom weapons. So they're basically... The theme is basically him taking Earth weapons and godly adding like gold plate and gems and stuff like that.
Oh, he's a Borderlands,
right?
Okay,
and I they so, go.
So you said godly, like G-A-U-D, etc.
Yes, yes.
I read that as godishly, like he's God. I was like, I don't remember Callus being. God, but maybe the plot has gotten
he's definitely slipping into the delusions of messianic, but
mm-hmm.
But yeah, and I think they're all actually re-releases of weapons from previously in the Destiny game or Destiny series. So, and then the other ones are weapons that are basically themed on the kind of undead Lovecraftian enemies. So a lot of bones and, you know, the sights are kind of these weird glowing, you know, dots that serve as red dot sights and things. So very, very strong graphic style.
Nice.
Yeah, that's all I got. Just been shooting mans.
Just been shooting some mans.
Who sometimes are rhinos.
I mean, of course. cool. Well, that sounds like this segment.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. This one is from last week. Dennis, what is the question we ask the nice people?
Yeah, we want to hear about your gaming nook or room or corner, whatever you game in. Do you have a special room or nook that you game in, and what makes it special? And also, what's one thing you would add to it if you could?
Yeah, and we'll get started with Sean, who says, I used to have my own man cave with my gaming setup, but during the pandemic, I had to turn it into a more suitable office space to work from. I'm still lucky enough to have the space to myself. Well, until my children grow up. Yeah. It's not for like any really good reason. And I'm not criticizing Sean here, but I want to take a pulse on this. Does anybody else just really not like the phrase man cave?
I mean, what's.
I'm neutral.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that. Is it caves that you don't like, or like
it feels
it no the other part.
Maybe this is some unexamined shittiness. It feels dismissive. of what like what somebody would kind of treat as their personal space. Yeah,
I would like it less if they call it like their shrine.
Yeah, no, that would be all. Yeah, also, I don't know. It is a weird phrase. Maybe I'm self-conscious about it because I live in bachelor house. You know, like it just like no.
I like, understand what you're saying. I do think it can be like interpreted either way, or it can be used either way. Where I think people can lovingly call something a man cave and not have any like any dismissive connotation.
It's one of those phrases that you read and you can immediately imagine all the internet fights that have happened with shitty people around that phrase, even though the phrase itself, like, I don't think is a problem.
Yeah, it's also one of those things that, like, again, this could totally be a me thing, but the it feels like a phrase that is that is always said. I always read it or hear it with an eye roll, you know, which is when it's like, oh, you know, just a person can have their own space, that's fine. Yeah, I don't know, but it's good that you had that space and were able to turn it into a work spot. You know, as regrettable as that may be, but the thing is, the things that you need for working and the things that you need for gaming are pretty similar in a lot of cases. So, you know,
it's our houses are becoming more and more like our phones, and that, you know, you don't use one place for one thing anymore. It's all got to do everything.
Yeah. let's see. I'm gonna move one down here. Not Dennis, you're the one I go to last. Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, I live in a small apartment and live alone, so my gaming space is separated. My bedroom has my big screen TV, along with my current gaming systems and my personal computer. The living room, which I also work out of, has my arcade cabs and my retro gaming systems. I'd like to have everything in one room, but this is the best I can do given the cramped space. I'd also love to add an arcade one-up pinball table, that can be hacked for any pinball game. If only I had the room for it. And then there is a picture of three of the arcade cabinets.
I'm very envious of that Tron cab. I've said that to you in the past, Greg, but it still is true. That is a nice cabinet and a fun game.
I see the fighting arcade cabinet and I'm like, oh, that would be fun. And then I'm immediately crippled by the anxiety of knowing just how terrible I am at fighting games.
That's the thing. Yeah.
If I had it in my house, I would feel an obligation to get good at it. And I know that's never going to happen.
Judging from the pictures that's on the top of the arcade, it seems like there's a good diversity of games where it's like there's a Pac-Man, there's a Dragon's Lair game, that like arcade game.
Mm-hmm.
Character.
That's a MAME machine, so it can hold any number of let's see. David, what does Eli say?
Eli says, I have a chair and when I'm gaming or eating a meal, I turn the TV towards it, while when I'm going to sleep or just laying in bed, I turn the TV to face the bed. Small studio apartment life.
It's a reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just good that you have a TV you can turn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, adjustable mount.
The TV
or the whip.
Turn.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Phil say?
Phil says, I could say, I just bring my Switch into the bathroom and give Cole a stroke.
Yeah. Whatever you do, you, as long as I'm never going to touch your Switch, but that was also very much in the cards that I was never going, I probably was never going to touch your Switch, you know, just because.
Wait, so do you not play your Switch in the bathroom?
No, I don't use electronics on the toilet.
So here's the funny thing for me. Phone on the toilet? Yeah, fine. Absolutely. Switch on the toilet just feels like too far. And I don't know where the line is. Like a Palm Pilot on the toilet?
Because it's a commitment with the Switch, right? You're sitting down for like a gaming session. If it's your phone, All right, knock out a single Sudoku puzzle, read a single Reddit article, you know, you're done. But.
All right, here's this one's going to get too real. You're listening to a podcast and you need to use the restroom. Do you pause the podcast?
Yes. That's not hard. Wait, what else are you going to do? Wait, turn up the speakers, keep the door open? What do you do?
Wait, you listen to podcasts without headphones?
Yeah.
I do.
No, I'll listen on my I usually listen through like a remote speaker. No, I have a Bluetooth speaker that hangs in my shower. So I can just throw to that, you know, and leave the, and leave the phone in my office like a gentleman, nice. You know?
Oh, okay. So the
wow,
speaker
I think I found the most.
What's that?
I was saying the speakers are what's the lost cause for you.
Yeah.
Like I've given up on my phone. I'll take another.
What were you going to say, David?
I think I've found the most cursed Steam game. Sorry, I was trying to look through my Steam library to kind of give me ideas of, you know, that sort of stuff. And under new and trending, sorry, this is totally off topic. Under new and trending, number 3 is Furry Hitler.
Ugh.
Which is a porn game.
Oh my god.
Man.
But would you play it on the toilet?
I mean.
Steam has gotten real lax about some of that stuff. Yeah. Oh well. Let me see here. Jeremy says, I have a living room that is only for me and my wife. The kids have got their own. The only thing I would add is maybe soundproofing for the ceiling as the kids are right above and maybe better blinds for the windows. Anything just to get better immersion. Yeah, you got to control your glare more than. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that makes perfect sense.
So our basement that we finished, you know, has the little window wells to the outside world. And we didn't think to put any blinds on them, but we have nugget couches for the kids. I don't know if that means anything to anyone, but it's like popular with kids in the middle school area where it's like you can use it as a building fort or you can assemble it into a couch.
Okay.
But like the triangle just like foam things that are the armrests fit perfectly into the windows. And so you come down and it kind of looks like sound baffling if you don't know it's a window, but you just plug the armrests into the window like a socket and block all the light.
Hey, nice a nice coincidence there.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying don't limit yourself to blinds.
Yeah. I mean, depending, not every window is as small as a window well in a basement is the thing.
Yeah, you just got to get really, really big armchair or armrest cushions.
Yeah, like the from the couch from that one Gallagher special.
You know, you go win one of those giant stuffed animals at a fair, mm-hmm. and plug that in the window.
Yeah, anything will do, or maybe some curtains. I think curtains might work.
It's two front door.
This just
also you could
window.
Nail your front door over the window.
The sky's the limit is the thing.
No, the sky is the limit when you're trying to limit the sky.
Yes. Let's see. And Ben finishes up with what Moonborn says.
Yeah, Moonborn says, I game on both console and PC, but do all set gaming at the same desk with the same monitor in my bedroom. It's a triple monitor setup, with the middle one being for games, and whenever I want to play one of my consoles, I just hit the Windows plus P to change the active displays, turn on the console in question, and let tech magic take care of the rest. HDMI auto switchers and auto input detection on monitors are magical things indeed.
Moonborn has it figured out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can I just say, I would want Bluetooth to work half as well as HDMI switching does.
Yeah, no, Bluetooth is a lost cause. HDMI auto switchers are things of magic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice. No, I might borrow some of those tricks, Moonboard, actually. That sounds great to me.
I'm resisting the urge to hit Windows P and just see what happens right now.
I'd rather keep you on the phone.
What's that? What's that? Control Alt F4?
Nope.
It's rm./-rf.
Somebody is listening on like something that is converting text or speech to text, and just that's not as dangerous as that as that weird MySQL insert that you can that you can do to destroy a database. But
Alexa, just fuck my shit up.
I feel like it's a safe joke because the number of people who are smart enough to regularly use console commands will also be smart enough to know what that does. So.
Yes. I imagine just like posting that in a newbie thread on /dot would get you banned, right?
Yeah, but you've done your damage.
True. True.
It's too late.
If you got banned, that's how you know it worked.
True. So I'll do mine. I want to say it's nothing fancy, but like I just have my living room with my television with the consoles in it. The only thing fancy out there is that I've got a stand that I can put my I've got like the Magic Keyboard for my iPad, so it's basically a laptop. But like the stand sits next to my recliner that I sit in when I play console games or stream PC games to my Apple TV, the Steam Link style. And like that, just the arm moves over my chair so that I can take notes, which is how I do the majority of my note taking for shows. If I'm playing games out there, that's how I do that. Like that's the one like specific thing that is of interest there. But otherwise, it's just a big screen TV, a recliner or a couch, and surround sound. In my office, the only thing like the red office, which is where I do my PC gaming and streaming from, as distinct from the blue office, which is where I am now, where I do like my audio production from. The only thing that's like different there is the streaming gear, so like the mic arm and the audio preprocessor, stuff like that. So anybody who's looking for like Willy Wonka style tricks that I might have, no. It's all pretty boring, actually. Nothing.
The Willy Wonka style trick is paint it red.
Yes, paint it a very, very dark red. No, absolutely do not, because it will take seven it will take seven coats, and the very nice local lady that you hired to come in and do the painting will be pretty upset, and you will feel bad and end up paying her almost twice as much as you agreed because it took so many coats.
Her own personal shining.
Yes. I have to say, I'm imagining, though, the red recording room as just the room from Twin Peaks.
I mean, I would put up the big curtains, but A, they're really expensive, or drapes rather, the big drapes. Those are incredibly expensive, and also cats. Basically, that would just be providing a climbing material to the cats. It would make that room into a big jungle gym for them, more so than it already is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben, how about you? What's your setup?
Yeah, I feel like I have a pretty simple setup. I think I'll probably post a picture on this thread just to share, but it's nothing too complicated. Just have the consoles hooked up. I think I have four things and three HDMI inputs, so something has to be the sad one out. I think right now it's the Google cat, like Chromecast.
Yeah.
But yeah, right now it's PS3, PS5, and Switch are hooked up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the only thing that's changed over the years is like what direction I need to turn my chair to face it. So like here I kind of have a weird two things on opposite sides of the room just by how like the room's set up. So I have my computer station facing one way, I think west, and I have my TV set up facing east, so they're like back to back. So
yeah.
Not the greatest setup, but given the space, it was what worked best there. So
no, that makes sense. I imagine that is much better now that you actually have a proper, chair to sit in.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. It's just a weird, like when I was in college, I could play either PC or console from the same chair because they were set like right next to one another. And here it's since it's more back to back, you have to like get up and go to what you want to do, but it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. Nice. David, how about you?
So my current setup is pretty boring. I just play in the living room. So I'm going to answer for my time in when I was in Manhattan, where I did have a special room that I played all my games in. And what made it special was it was the only room.
Yeah. No, it's a very real situation for lots of folks.
Did you have a TV that swivels?
No. Oh. There was no need.
Nice. Well, and Dennis, sorry, I did not mean to skip you.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not going to let me not talk about my setup. So the one principle that's gone through every iteration of my gaming setup, specifically my PC setup, is I want the monitor set up somewhere where I can easily kind of look past it and see our like main TV.
Yes.
And that in since being at our last house has always been constant wherever I was. And I like that a lot because I can, you know, I have always those two screens hooked together, so I can use it as a second screen if someone is watching what I'm doing, a la the kids. Or I can, you know, have split screens and have, you know, whatever extra thing up on the big screen if I only need to reference it now and again. Or I can also like put on Netflix if I'm playing a game that is particularly low key in front of me, as well as just throwing to the big screen for more cinematic games and the like. So that's my pro tip, is just put your monitor at a place where you can also watch your big screen and link the two together. I guess I should mention, since we talked arcade cabinets, that I have my my pinball table, my digital pinball table, immediately to my left, and I can vouch for that. If you can find one that is economical for you to get, it is absolutely worth the ad.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool. No, I just I think that. I don't know. I'm not unusual, but I do think about this kind of logistic stuff quite a bit, as revealed by how often I'm rearranging things and changing rooms around and stuff. But no,
that and organization systems. Do you still do note cards as much as you used to?
No. I'm on more computerized system stuff.
Yeah. But always experiment.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm always kind of tweaking stuff around. No, what you're saying about that, like always having the main television or the main screen viewable from where you're sitting down to do your stuff, if you're doing PC, that is such a that is such a huge thing. If possible, like next time anybody is anybody who's listening is rearranging stuff or just trying to get a different outlook, doing the desk pointing to the middle of the room as opposed to the desk pointed at the wall,
is a
really easy way. To
you feel like a fighter pilot strapping into a cockpit when you get into it and it's facing out into the room.
I don't know about that. You
have a VR system though for playing that.
Yeah, but no, just over. It's a little bit less claustrophobic having a world beyond the screen that you're looking at, you know, as opposed to like what I have right now, kind of just because this room is tiny, but also for soundproofing purposes. What I have now is this wall behind my monitors with the soundproofing on it, right?
Yeah. Plus, when you throw your controller, it really sails instead of that unsatisfying immediate clunk.
Yeah, the immediate thud. Yeah, you want to get a good spin on it. There's no room for rotations.
Is to get like a simulator rig set up, so you know where you have the nice chair and then you know mounted kind of around you a series of monitors.
Oh, like one of those scorpion chair kind of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Those get crazy.
Cool. Well, thank you, Dennis, for posting this. Thank you, everybody, for responding. If you would like to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end thought.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. I'll start here with one that is almost a story. I don't know about you. I don't know about y'all. I ended up having a pretty hard time finding a story. I think that a lot of stuff is waiting for not E3, but all of the stuff that has popped up in E3's place here in the June, you know, corridor. But got this one. So back in January, it was revealed that all of the Dark Souls games on PC had something really, really wrong with them. There was an exploit built in where if you were connected online, it was really, really bad news for your network security. Think like remote code execution kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So since January, there has been no official multiplayer play for any of the Dark Souls games. So Remastered, Prepare to Die, Dark Souls 3, Dark Souls 2. I'm specifically talking about PvP, right? Which PvP, though you cannot, though you can choose not to engage with it, you know, by invading people and stuff, it's a pretty big part of like the faction systems. You get those covenants going on there and what have you. But it's been near, you know, four and a half months without any word until just a few days ago, as of the time we recorded, where PC Gamer reached out and said, and asked like, hey, what's going on? FromSoft said, currently in the process of restoring the online servers for the Dark Souls series on PC. They plan to restore online servers for each game progressively, bringing back servers for Dark Souls 3 once we complete the necessary work to correct the problem. So at the very least, they didn't just run. Yeah. It is something that they're still working on. I don't envy them that problem or needing to fix it. But yeah, I guess the news story is maybe at some point PC multiplayer might be coming back on Dark Souls. But in the meantime, use the lack of multiplayer, you know, and being, you know, offline, disconnected, put Steam in offline mode and play some mods in Dark Souls. Play the randomizer mod. Play any of the content mods, you know, Augur of Darkness or I believe it's the Ashen mod for Dark Souls 3. Yeah, mess around with those. This is a good opportunity because why would you be online anyway? You can't connect to anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Take those lemons and make some Estus.
Yeah. No, that's how that's what's in Estus.
It's just lemonade. What the hell?
It is refreshing. Hey, Dennis, what's going on with this asshole that I do not want to hear anything more about?
Yeah, man, if you wanted one more reason to hate Elon Musk and one more reason to love hard drive, like I get a lot of joy out of hard drive. They do a good job.
They've had a good few months with their headlines. For people who don't know, hard drive is The Onion, but for games. It's run by the satire site The Hard Times, which is The Onion, but for punk music. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they cover a lot of ground, so they don't limit themselves when there's some fun to be made. And of course, the tech bro billionaire thought it was a good idea to go toe-to-toe on the internet with comedy writers, you mm-hmm. know, people's whose job it is to make witty comebacks. And it did not go well for Musk. Yeah. So originally when we were preparing, I just sent a link to the, you know, the Kotaku article on this exchange, but since hard drive has written a public apology letter, that's mm-hmm. an article, which is titled "Hard Drive Apologizes to Elon Musk for Dunking on Him Too Hard."
Yeah.
And man, is it a good highlight reel of the exchange. Basically, Elon started off sharing one of hard drive's articles, but he had kind of clipped hard drive out of it. I don't think he did it personally. He probably just found it somewhere.
He just found it on Reddit because that's where he spends all of his time.
Right.
Although I actually found another article that said apparently he's very outspoken that he is opposed to attributing things.
I think he took that position because he's an idiot. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
But. Yeah, that is an easy thing to throw back to get out of jail free for doing shitty things. And,
yeah. But what if theft was good?
Yeah. Right. But anyway, I don't think there was like he was derping around in Photoshop, but he shared it. And when you're sharing things with an account with millions and millions of followers, it's good to do your homework a little bit more than he does. Mm-hmm. So Hard Drive called him out for it. by saying, hey, I'll give you a horse if you stop cropping our name off our articles.
Referring to a sexual harassment scandal where he offered a flight attendant on one of his planes a horse in exchange for inappropriate touching.
So, Musk tried to say, this thing that I just found funny enough to share isn't that funny anyway. And it just went downhill from there.
Yeah. He said, it's not funny. It's like a bad day on SNL. And they responded with a screen cap of him dressed as Wario and said, well, you would be familiar with SNL's worst days.
Yes. Managing to tie in video games to it as mm-hmm. well. Excellent. Excellent form. So, I mean, as the Hard Drive quote unquote apology letter points out, Elon Musk got ratioed multiple times in the course of 20 minutes. Hard Drive really did their thing well in this exchange. So,
but it still brought attention to this man that I'm very tired of hearing about.
I know, it's hard to find a headline on a slow week that doesn't involve him. It is annoying.
I'm not criticizing you, Dennis. It's to the, this is a broader problem in the world.
Yeah.
I did notice that Hard Space Shipbreaker has a Elon Musk reference.
Oh, god damn it.
Yeah, I'm sure. Probably derogatory. Given the tone, I can't see them being very fond of him.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. No.
It is exclusively derogatory towards Elon from me. Here on out, I would say.
Yeah.
In summary, go read the Hard Drive. They're really
good. Yeah. No, they're good. And if you share something from them, attribute it. He said like, it's a mediocre meme or something like that. It's not a, like he calls it memes and he's trying to make like, sharing memes is this, big new thing, blah, blah, blah. That's not a meme. That's a screenshot of a headline and the image. And it really bothers me. Like everything about the man bothers me that he called it a meme because
it didn't go through a publisher and 3,000 middlemen to reach the internet, though.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ben, what's Respawn up to?
Just a tiny story. Yeah, they revealed that there's going to be a sequel to Jedi Fallen Order, which I think people kind of knew already. It's going to be called Star Wars Jedi Survivor. It was announced at Star Wars Celebration, which happened last week, and it's going to be released sometime in 2023. Other than that, they just said a bunch of platitudes of like... He's going to grow more with the Force.
Yeah.
He'll unlock new abilities as he plays. Cool.
Like a Jedi will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's so interesting in these kinds of games to see the way they engineer getting players back through the learning curve.
Yeah.
When this is a character that you've, basically taken from beginner to all powerful in the first game. You got to find ways to nerf him so that the player can get back up to speed if this is their first game in the series. Yeah.
They did mention the second game will take place like 10 years after the events of the first one.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
So maybe he will have forgotten everything. Your character will have forgotten everything as well as you have.
Yeah. By being in hiding and not working on his skills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just the ravages of age.
Mm.
Yeah, I could say, but no. If 10 years later, I read Cal as like 20 something, right?
Yeah,
like he's not a teenager or anything, so he's getting firmly into middle adulthood. I think the thing I've been trying to suss out is the Sith that it shows him squaring off against in the trailer looks Darth Vader-ish, but
it looks like the race in Revenge of the Sith, in the world where Obi-Wan fought, like, what's his name? The robot dude? There's like a twin race in that planet where it's like the people above who are all pale and have lines in their face, and then the worker class below.
Well, that one isn't necessarily the person that he's fighting with a lightsaber, however.
Yeah.
It also looks like an Inquisitor, which I don't know the lore behind that.
Yeah, no, that'll factor in, because that's the key thread from the first game. And so people were angry that this was, I think, spoiled in the trailer of Fallen Order. So I don't feel bad sharing it as a spoiler there, but they used Darth Vader to great effect in the first game, mm-hmm. where he shows up and you run from him. Like, you don't try to fight Darth Vader. You run from Darth Vader.
Oh, yeah.
And that, it was just so well done. It was like, okay, yeah, I if you had had Darth Vader be the final boss that I was going to fight and win, even win by like kicking over the side of something or whatever, you know, the temporary victory, it would have not felt right. So I will be interested to see how that factors back in the second game. Because it makes it fairly clear, like, you know, with all the Inquisitors, that Darth Vader is involved and he's got his eye on that program and now Cal. So, I'd like to see that explored.
Yeah. Nice. David, what you got?
I got nothing.
Attaboy. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Let us button.
Pathetic. Thank you so much for listening to level number 416. We really appreciate it. If you would like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/duckvtv. You can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. You can leave ratings or reviews. You can tell your friends. And most of all, you can come back next week. I don't see a reason to belabor the admin stuff. Reminder, if you watch my streams, I'm going to be taking a couple weeks off here as I try and, just kind of regather my resources. I always feel the need to make way too many excuses for any time off that I take. Anyway.
Welcome to America.
Yeah, I sound like an American.
Yes. is there anything I'm forgetting? Dennis, you are going to be at shows, is that correct?
Yes, I'm going to be at Origins. And as I vamp to pull up exactly what booth I'm going to be at, I would love to see anyone from Duckfeed who is going to Origins.
Where is Origins at?
It is in Columbus.
Oh, nice.
You will find me in booth 637 of Exhibit Hall A with Foreteller. So it'll be a good time.
Nice. So go and see Dennis if you can.
When will that be again?
That is, I think, starting June 8th. It's the Wednesday, and it goes through the 11th.
Nice.
Or through the 12th, actually, I think.
Hmm. Very cool. Well, I have been Cole Ross. You can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me at Origins.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles.
If you guys just say your names, it feels too similar to the opening, and I'm ready to start a new episode now.
No.
Okay, let's roll.
I'm very sleepy. I've only got one, the pizza oven of love.
Yes, I wrote that down as well.
Okay.
I also have constantly fighting against entropy.
Okay.
And then your own personal shining.
That is the room where I have the curtains up that are the pattern from the carpet in The Shining, from the hallway. David, did you write any down?
Nope.
Ben.
not my proudest collection, but I only have one. It's Shit Rocket.
How do we feel about the Pizza Oven of Love?
I'm for it.
All right.
I support this.
Cool. Let's see. I'm going to stop the recording. This is weird because normally I end on the I got on anything personal, but I end on us hanging up. But now I need to press stop because we're using a different thing now. So I'm going to press stop. Bye, everybody.